Now, what would be something that would be, would there be something that would be a transshipment which would not be subject to PPP&M?
If it didn't need to be packed. If it didn't need to be packed.
Right.
And a lot of things, the transshipment really is just something that comes into the depot that needs to go somewhere else immediately. It never is stored in the warehouse, and that's why it's called non-accountable material.
So if you had a transshipment, but you didn't have to pack it, you wouldn't charge it under CLIN 2.
That is correct, Your Honor. But, you know, if you look at the...
I take it that your answer to the government's argument that the material to be shipped, comma, off-base transshipments, the government's argument is that you're arguing that that means some material to be shipped and all off-base transshipments. You're saying, no, it means some and some. Is that right?
Yes,
is that
Honor.
A fair,
yes,
fair position?
Absolutely. The government is, you know, the only way the government can get around this language is by adding words and mental gymnastics and trying to make things into adjectives that aren't really adjectives. If you read the plain language of the contract, it says packing transshipments will be done under 551. Now, let's get back to the economics a little bit because I think it's important for you to understand this. If the contractor only anticipates packing 1 in 10 items as part of the issue function, you know, most of the things come right off the shelf and they slap a label on it and send it off. But if the contractor looks at the contract and says, okay, this is not covered under CLIN 1, this is not covered under CLIN 1, engines aren't covered under CLIN 1, broken items aren't covered under CLIN 1, I'm not going to include any cost to pack those things under CLIN 1. I'm only going to include costs that I really, relating to work, I have to pack under CLIN 1. So in the example of 1 in 10 items needs to be packed under CLIN 1 under the contractor's interpretation, which doesn't include transshipments, it may cost $20 to pack that item. And the price of CLIN 1 is going to include $2 because you're going to recover that $2 over the 10 items that needs to be packed. But there's only $2 that is in the contractor's proposal for packing those 10 items. So if 3 items need to be packed in 10, the contractor loses money.
Well, then let me ask you a little bit different question, getting away perhaps from the economics of it, and I understand what you're arguing there. One of the issues is, and the panel may or may not have to reach it, is latent ambiguity, the reasonableness of your interpretation and whether you relied on it. Okay. Now, you point, and correct me if I'm wrong, you point to a number of places in the record where I think you say the record reflects that your client's bid did not reflect packing of off-base transshipments in CLIN 001. Okay?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now,
we spent several pages explaining exactly why.
No, I mean, so you do point to those, and I think to that extent the record, there is support in the record for that, but can you show me any place in the record that shows your client affirmatively saying, okay, transshipments are in CLIN 002. Do you understand my question?
I do, Your Honor. And, you know, it's funny. You wish it was a statement like that in retrospect so you could iron it out. But the contractor did say to the DCA auditors who are evaluating their price proposal before
the
award.
Oh, no, I understand. There's the statement, and that's...
The materials for packing transshipments are in CLIN 2.
But you're saying there's no, but just to answer my question, you're right, there is that statement to the auditors, but you're saying there's no like chart or anything like that or
I wish it were that easy, Your Honor. The government identified about 5,000 transshipments that needed to be packed.
Yeah, that was my next question.
That was the only quantity of transshipments that the government identified that needed to be packed. And Labatt
Now, let me
proposal
ask you,
included
in
those
that,
in CLIN 2.
In that regard, I guess this is the document at 2488 of the joint appendix. And I think you, in somewhere in your briefing, you point to this and you say, well, this document shows 5,077 transshipments and they're in CLIN 02. Now, the government comes back and says, yes, that's correct, but these were all included in CLIN 2 to be packed to level A or B. Okay?
If the government would have said, these are all A and B packing, that would be fine. It would also have been fine if the government would have told the contractor, you have to pack 100,000 transshipments under CLIN 1. But you can look through the entire RFP, and the contractor is not put on notice of that. The contractor is at a disadvantage. The government knows.
So you're saying, Mr. McGovern, that there's nothing in this document that reflects a limitation to A and B type of items?
No, Your Honor. As far as transshipments are concerned, as a matter of fact, if you look at 551...
I apologize for cutting you off, but time is fleeting, and I know you have some points you want to make, but I had a couple of questions that I wanted to get to, so excuse my interruption there. The kind of marching through the findings here, there are two findings in the record, and I'm looking, I guess, at the attachment to your brief, A5 and A7. Finding 14 on page A5 and finding 22 on page A7. These findings both would, I think, and the government, I think, points to them, would lend support to the argument that, or they show the board saying you didn't rely on your interpretation. What is your answer to these two findings, 14 and 22?
A couple of points. The government never maintained that you could look at these documents and come to the conclusion the board made.
Which documents are you referring to? There?
Well,
the documents, supposedly the tab documents?
Well, the documents that are cited in the findings. Okay. I mean, the board looked at a couple of pages from Labatt's proposal backup information. One of the pages had to do with traffic management, which doesn't involve packing at all. I mean, remember, transshipments are handled. They have to be taken. They would have to be taken and put on the back of the truck. They have.
Well, the government points to, I guess, the document at 2246 for finding 14, I think. Sorry to be jumping around like this, Mr. McGill, but it's one of these cases where you have to kind of be a little bit of an octopus. You look here, and then you got to go there. And
We're pretty familiar with the general outlines. I think we're looking for specific points that are bothering each of us.
I understand. But, the key point, in my mind at least, is that Labatt didn't include any packing materials or labor in CLIN 1 for packing transshipments. So every transshipment it packs under CLIN 1, it loses money because there's no money in there to pack those transshipments. And that's the nub of the issue. And you can look at all of that proposal backup documents, which some are clear and some are not. We think that the one proposal backup document that is clear, at least with some additional explanation, which we have in our brief, is that if you look at the cost breakout for packing labor under CLIN 1, there is no packing labor for transshipments. And that couldn't be a clearer expression of the contractor's interpretation at the time as to what it understood. The judge looked at a couple of proposal backup documents that it interpreted as meaning otherwise, but we've explained in our brief why the judge misread those documents. And the government never contended, this is an important point too, we've been at this for a long time, and the government never once contended that you could look at Labatt's proposal or any other document in this case and show that Labatt did not rely on its interpretation. Never. It didn't cross-examine the witness that we put on the stand, who swore up and down, I swear to God, Your Honor, we did not include transshipments in CLIN 1. He was not cross-examined on that.
Is it your position that PPP&M applies only to transshipments?
No, Your Honor. 3P&M covers a lot of different items. And in every other case, the government paid Labatt for packing under 3P&M. There's no dispute on anything else other than transshipments. Labatt read the contract. It had what it had. It said, if the requirement's in 551, it's not in CLIN 1. They put the price, they didn't include any costs for packing transshipments in CLIN 1. Then after the contract, the government said, no, that's included. And not only did they say it was included, they backed the truck up and had Labatt pack all of these transshipments, essentially for nothing, because it wasn't recovering the cost of packing the transshipments.
And it knew
it was a dispute, which is really what's, I mean, sort of sticks in your craw. It knew that there was a dispute on this issue. This is an IDIQ contract.
What's your response to the last sentence in 5.4.1.3?
It's another carve-out as to what's covered under CLIN 2. Basically, it's saying, you know, this work isn't covered under this packing paragraph. It doesn't negate the fact that the requirement is covered under 551.
So when it says PPP&M addresses packing requirements, et cetera, that's just not necessarily
it's not all
PPP&M addresses only packing requirements, et cetera.
It's not all-inclusive. And our example is COSES, so that's one example. It's possible, even under the government's interpretation, that that the contractor would do care of items in storage, repacking to minimum military packing levels under CLIN 2, as long as it took more than an hour per location. So that's an example of where that last line that the government likes to rely on does not cover all the possible scenarios under the contract.
So that would be under 551, but it would not be within the scope of the last sentence of 5431, is what you're saying.
It would be under... The rule, they have a lot of different rules for this contract. COSES that took less than an hour would be paid for under 541. COSES that took longer than an hour would be paid for under 551. So
right.
the only criteria...
What you're saying, I think if I understand you correctly, is that is an example of something that's under 551 but is not within the scope of the sentence at the end of 5431.
Correct.
So therefore, you say 5431 can't mean... 5.4.551 includes only the things in that sentence.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Let me ask you quickly a question about the each issue. Do you agree with the government? The government brings out a couple of examples of the application of your view as to each. One is with the respect to the bags in which you charge for every bag, and the other is with respect to the, I think it was the wire, which you charge by the foot.
I'm glad you asked that question because I really wanted to get this point in. The government set a unitary price for everything, $25.34. And if you look at the record at A2690, it lists some of the common things that are packed under CLIN 2. And in that list, there's an aircraft ejection seat that, by the government's own estimate, costs $477, costs, not including profit. It includes a horizontal stabilizer at $408.30, and these weren't necessarily the largest items. So if you packed 1,000 ejection seats, the government, that would have cost the contractor about $500,000 to pack, based upon the government's own estimates. The contractor would be paid $25,000. So the contractor to pack that work is losing almost $500,000. You've got to pack a lot of waterproof bags, washers, and other small things to come out economically in the same place. And this is the scheme that the government created. But they're happy to pay for things that cost $500,000 when they only have to pay $25,000. But they complain about paying for packing waterproof bags at some exorbitant price. But the government only has itself to blame for the contract structure that it created.
And
all we're trying to do is
a foot of cable is a unit. What's the justification for that?
Well,
so you went from 8,000 foot cable to 8,000 units of issue.
Labatt was just trying to do what it thought it had to do, and it relied on the definition.
I mean, why not 96,000 by counting by the inch?
Well. Let me give you an answer to that. The definition of each that's incorporated by reference into the contract says each is a numeric quantity of one item of supply. Do not use it if a more specific term applies, such as kit, set, assortment, assembly, group, sheet, plate, strip, or length. So that was an exception to the rule. In 99% of the cases, we're talking about eaches. But sometimes the government issues things that are in a quantity that's not designated as an each. Sometimes it's designated as a length. So all Labatt was doing was complying with what it thought the rule was. And it's important to understand that the workload was calculated by eaches.
So, Governor, thank you. You've gone over your time, I think, by about 6 minutes. But we will restore your 3 minutes of rebuttal because you had some questions from the panel. And we'll hear from the government now. Mr. Ibe? Have I pronounced it correctly?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, we'll give you additional time to match Mr. McGovern's if you need it so that it equals out.
I appreciate
so
it.
Why don't we give the government start off with what we have and we'll keep track.
Your Honor, before I begin, as way of introduction, I have with me at counsel's desk Daniel Poling from the Defense Logistics Agency and Michael Mahoney, who's now with the Defense Contract Management Agency. These are two gentlemen who tried the case at the board level.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome to the court. Go ahead whenever you're ready, Mr. Hyde.
May it please the court. The board's judgment should be affirmed because the government's interpretation gives meaning to all of the provisions in the contract, and Labatt's does not. The basic question is, what is the proper cost to be charged for the minimum military packing of off-base transshipments? And the answer lies in the plain language of the contract. There's nothing ambiguous about what minimum military packing is. It is the most basic level of packing that can occur at the depot. And there really is no dispute about what an off-base transshipment is. An off-base transshipment is when material comes in and is immediately marked for delivery to another location, either on the base or off the base. And it is undisputed that an off-base transshipment is an issue. And if the court would like, they could go to A2422 of the joint appendix, which is at the top of the page, is section 5413. And 5413 governs packing and packaging of issues. And it says, packing and packaging shall be accomplished to minimum military requirements. That tells us that based on an issue that's packed, should be packed to minimum military level, and it should be charged to CLIN 1. The last sentence of 5413 states section 5.51, PP&M, addresses packing requirements for repairable items with GNF condition codes needing minimum military packing. And then this is the key. And all items needing above minimum military packing. And that is the signal. That is what tells the contractor, if I have an issue, which is an off-base transshipment, the only way that it's going to be charged, CLIN 2, triple PNM, is if it's above minimum military packing.
So is it your position that the reference to minimum military packing in 551 only includes the 5431 provision having to do with GNF condition? I'm sorry, yeah, GNF condition cases?
Yes, Your Honor.
Even though it doesn't say that?
Well, it says it here in 5413.
Only if you read that sentence as if it had the word only in it. I mean, it's certainly clear that 551 does include these items. The only question is that all that 551 refers to? If 551 refers to that and other things as well in describing PP&M, then that argument, it seems to me, falls away. You understand what I'm saying?
I don't, Your Honor.
Okay, well, let me try again.
Okay.
Because it's an important point.
Yes, Your Honor.
If I understand your argument, you're saying when you get to 5413 and you see down here that there's a reference to 551, which is the CLIN 2 in B, you see that it says CLIN 2 addresses, and then you have a narrow category of cases. You say that's all that 551 refers to, and therefore that's all we have to pay under CLIN 2, correct?
We would say that I don't think that's entirely accurate.
All right. How is it? Because one way is it wrong? Because that's what I understood to be your position.
Because you can, you being Labatt, can PP&M anything, anything that has that national stock number that tells them to do it. So we're not placing any limit on the PP&M work that's supposed to be going on. What we are saying is, there's a reason why you have this special function, and that's 5.51. You know, the section says special function. This is a special packing provision. Yes, Your Honor.
So anything, what you're saying, though, is 5.51 applies only to these special types of packing that are listed in the last sentence of 5.4.1.3, correct?
No, Your Honor, we're not saying that. Because,
all right, then
because
what do you make of the last sentence of 5.4.1.3?
Because what we make of it is probably two things. The reference to minimum military requirements at F and G, that makes sense, because what F and G conditioned items are items that are damaged that need to have special care. So it would make sense that they would fall under 5.51. If you have, there's going to take more time. You're going to have to follow certain guidelines for the repairable item. So it makes sense that that would fall under that requirement.
Sure. And then everybody agrees that 5.51 does include those things. The question is, does it include anything beyond those things, specifically minimum military packing that's subject to PPPM? And you say no, unless it falls within
yes,
F and G.
That's,
right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Would F and the last that last few words of 5.4.1.3 and all items needing above minimum military packing, would you say that covers A and B?
Yes,
packing?
Your Honor.
So you're saying then that last clause that you've been, or the last sentence that you've been discussing with Judge Bryson, just is saying that 5.5.1 just covers basically G and F and A and B, right?
Yes.
Is that consistent with all of the items specified in 5.5.1.1.2.3? Etc. We got the PPP&M for COSIS, PPP&M in support of NADEP San Diego. Are those things described in those two sections repairable items with GNF condition codes or items needing above minimum military packing?
Well, Your Honor, with regard to COSIS, COSIS is not an issue, so it's a different category. It's a different animal. It wouldn't fall under 5.4.1.3.
All right. So that explains paragraph. So what about the support of NADEP? Does that identify items, issues that are consistent with that statement in 5.4.1.3?
We would say that it does, Your Honor, yes. It's because when we're talking about issues, the issues all fall under 5.4.1.3. And the issues that we have are on-base issues, off-base issues, on-base transshipments, off-base transshipments. And anything that is not that but falls under 5.5.1 then would require that sort of packing process or function.
What do you make of the of the language that Judge Bryson brought up at the beginning of the argument with your adversary in 5.5.1 talks about the PA shall perform PPP&M on material to be shipped as well as off-base transshipments. What do you make of that language?
As we addressed in our brief, and it's a consistent reading that we have. It is, and the reading is, triple P&M can occur on material to be shipped. It can occur on off-base transshipments. It can occur for material turned into storage, which is MTIS. There's no qualifications that we place upon it. We don't say, well, it's some material to be shipped, Your Honor, but it's all off-base transshipments. There's a consistency to what we're saying. We are reading the contract in its entirety, and we're not adding or subtracting words to get to bootstrap to a result that we want.
But your position, and I think theirs as well, is that if PP&M does not have to be performed on particular materiel, then 551 doesn't apply, right? And the charge doesn't come in under 551.
Absolutely.
All right. But I think that's their position as well. So you're both saying that PA shall perform PP&M on material to be shipped really means some material to be shipped, because some doesn't need to have PP&M applied to it, right?
That's true.
Okay, so the argument that, well, they're trying to put some in here and so forth doesn't seem to me to carry much force, since you're taking the same position.
But the position that Labatt is actually taking, though, is that all off-base transshipments packed to minimum military level.
I understand.
And they use this sentence to support that argument. And it, just grammatically speaking, or logically speaking, you can't read the sentence to say, well, some material to be shipped, which I believe we've sort of agreed on right now, and then have another classification and say, well, that one would be all off-base transshipments.
You're saying that they're necessarily saying all transshipments simply because they say that 551 includes minimum military packaging. But if we conclude that minimum military packaging is included within 551, then those two phrases don't cease to make sense. They make sense. I mean, the all and some problem goes away, right?
Well, I'm not sure that it does go away. I guess I don't understand how you...
Well, in other words, if we don't agree with you that the last sentence of 5413, I guess it is, 5413, yeah, if that does not tell us that 551 excludes minimum military packaging that doesn't have GNF problems, then we look at 551 and we ask the question, well, does this cover minimum military packaging and normal minimum military packaging? I don't think the language that you emphasize in your brief of that material to be shipped off-base transshipments, I don't think there's any strangeness to that language as construed by Labatt. That becomes strange only if you read the last sentence, as far as I can see, of 5413 in the way that you're proposing.
Well, I would encourage the court to read the last sentence of 5413, because we do need to look at the contract as a whole, and if
I've read it many times.
It's been a principal object
of our attention, but it doesn't seem to me that one is necessarily drawn to your construction.
I understand that, Your Honor.
No matter how often you read it.
No, exactly. I understand that, Your Honor, but if the interpretation that Labatt wants to place on this does is it goes away from the central point of why you have an extra charge for triple P&M, and that's because you're doing something more than minimum military packing. And that's why the unit price is five times as much as it is for the CLIN 1 price. And that's why when it's referred to GNF condition codes, it makes sense, because there's going to be more, it's going to take more time to pack that box or to pack that item. And
are you saying the PPP&M under 5.5.1 does not include minimum military packing for anything?
No, it includes it for F and G, or G and F conditions.
Because the paragraph itself does talk about applicable levels, level A, level B, and minimum military packing.
Right.
So nothing in 5.5.1 would exclude minimum military packing for transshipments, off-base transshipments.
Even non-F and Gs.
Looking at 5.5.1, there's nothing in that section that would exclude minimum military packing for off-base transshipments, correct?
The sentence you're reading, Your Honor, again, you're correct. The court is correct. However,
of 5.4.1.3. I understand that. And certainly you have to read this in context. But then you look at the language in 5.4.1.3, and it talks about how this section addresses packing requirements for repairable items with GNF codes and all items needing above minimum military packing. But it doesn't say that's all. It doesn't say only those things.
That's correct.
But as I understand it, that's your position, that sentence from 5.4.1.3 imposes an only requirement on 5.5.1.
What it requires is that the contractor read the entirety of the sentence of the contract and to recall that 5.4.1.3 applies to all issues. And issues are supposed to be packed to a minimum military level unless they are otherwise identified as requiring this special packing function. And even if Labatt's interpretation were deemed reasonable, making this solicitation ambiguous, which we don't concede, the conflict created by that interpretation is so glaring. Obviously, Labatt should have brought it to the attention of the government, and they did not. And there's no evidence that they ever did.
Okay, let me go back to 5.4.1.3 again. As the first sentence talks about sort of the default, packing shall be accomplished to minimum military requirements. All right? Then the last sentence says that PPP&M addresses all items needing above minimum military packing. So let's suppose there's something that doesn't need above minimum military packing, but it's a transshipment. What excludes that transshipment from falling under the CLIN 2 category specified in 5.5.1, which says PPP&M talks about covers off-base transshipments, and the applicable levels could include minimum military packing. Isn't that perfectly consistent? In other words, if 5.4.1.3, the first and last sentences don't necessarily have to be read to exclude PPP&M from items that don't need above minimum military packing.
I'm just trying.
It's confusing.
Right.
And it may be due to my questioning. So. But I think you see the problem I'm having.
That what you're saying is the court is saying that there's no exclusion in 5.4.1.3?
Well, I don't find any exclusion in 5.5.1. So if there's no exclusion in 5.5.1, then it would seem to me that 5.5.1 could include, as Labatt argues, all off-base transshipments. regardless of the level of packing required, as long as they require PPP&M packing. Right. Now, so then the question is, all right, what is it in the contract that might exclude from 5.5.1 and from CLIN 2 with respect to minimum military packing on transshipments, off-base transshipments? And you're turning to 5.4.1.3 for that exclusion. But the language, the sentence that you're referring to, doesn't say only or limited to. It does specify certain things that require PPP&M. So that's not a problem. But it doesn't exclude other things.
It would exclude anything that is needing above minimum military packing if we read what 5413, the last sentence of 5413 says.
Well, it just says that PPP&M does include all items needing above minimum military packing, but it doesn't say PPP&M cannot apply to things that don't need above minimum military packing.
I guess what Judge Lynn is saying, I want to make sure I understand. I think it's a good point. It seems that what he's pointing out is that the provision to which you point as excluding doesn't exclude.
Okay.
At least one thing that seems to emerge is from this, and I can only speak for myself, it's hard to see how, given the interesting colloquy we've been having with you and Mr. McGovern, it's hard to see how there's a patent ambiguity here. It's hard to see how there's a patent ambiguity, and it's hard to see how, at least for me, Labatt advanced an unreasonable interpretation. I mean, they may not have the right one, but just the atmosphere here suggests that it's not an unreasonable one. Let me ask you this, Mr. Hybe. Getting to the point of reliance, what do you point to as your silver bullet for the proposition that Labatt did not rely on its interpretation?
Your Honor,
in other words, your best argument in the record for non-reliance.
I think it's key what you just said, in the record, because, Your Honor, there is nothing in the record that affirmatively shows that Labatt relied upon its interpretation.
You say they didn't satisfy their burden of showing reliance. That's
correct. And then as to go to the silver bullet, we would 2246 of the appendix. And
2246.
And this was a document that was brought to Mr. McGovern's attention during his opening remarks. This is the backup data for CLIN 1, and it refers to transshipments on base and off base. It gives a cost analysis of these issues, and then it states, you know, approximately 70% of 117,680 each of medium bulk transshipments and issues will require shipping labels only. This is a document that is a cost document that shows the costs for transshipments, which are off-base or on-base, which are issues, to fall under CLIN 1. There, Labatt devotes about 9 pages in its brief to trying to run away from this document and documents at 2117 and 2119, which show cost breakdowns that include the words off-base transshipments under CLIN 1 headings. There is no document that has been brought to anyone's attention that says CLIN 2, year 1, that identifies off-base transshipments. There's been no backup documentation of estimates that were done in preparation for the bid. There's no emails. There's nothing to show that they ever relied on this.
Tavi, I think Mr. McGovern recognizes that there's nothing affirmative, but I guess we'll have to bring your part of the argument to an end. I think with giving him his 3 minutes, you'll both have had about the same time.
Okay.
But thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. McGovern, as I said, you've got your 3 minutes of rebuttal, and I think that'll pretty much give everyone about the same time. Let me ask you just to pick up where Mr. Hybe was finishing. What do you say about his reliance on the documents at 2117, 2119, and 2246 on this reliance issue in connection with a latent ambiguity?
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, first of all, we're not running away from everything, anything. We've
I'm
explained
sure you
all
wouldn't.
These documents. 2246. It says approximately 70% of 117,000 each medium bulk transshipments will require shipping labels only. Okay, transshipments require shipping labels only under CLIN 1. Why wouldn't you count those under CLIN 1 if you had to put a shipping label on them? That doesn't say you pack it under CLIN 1. And this
thing is dealing with shipping labels.
Well,
what about the 30%?
Remember the packing? This is a high-level sheet that applies to all of CLIN 1 activities. But there was a separate breakout sheet for packing.
What about the other 30%, though? Some level of packing and packaging.
Those are not transshipments.
I mean, this does not refer, when you say medium bulk transshipments issues, I mean, we're talking about a universe here. 70% plus 30% presumably is the,
yes,
is
Your
the
Honor.
Universe
and,
we're talking about.
And it's entirely feasible. I mean, the math is such that you can exclude all of the transshipments from the packing and still have this statement be accurate. That's the bottom line. Other things need to be packed. And we don't dispute that. As a matter of fact, Labatt packed a lot of things under CLIN 1, and that was covered, and they bid $5.87 to pack it under CLIN 1. Now let's turn to
the other ones, 2117 and 2119.
Okay, look at the heading. Traffic management.
This is 2117.
2117. Traffic management. Somebody has to got to figure out where things are supposed to go. Make sure that it gets on the back of the truck. This is labor to make sure that things get on the back of the truck. It's traffic management. It's not packing. Why the judge thought this had anything to do with packing is a mystery.
And then what about 19? 2119, Mr. McGovern.
Okay, and again, remember, look at the top of the page. Receipt, issue, stow, workload. Okay? Transshipments have to be received, they have to be issued, and they don't have to be stowed, but they have to be received and issued. And there has to be some labor associated with that activity. So the fact that there's some labor associated with that activity doesn't mean anything, doesn't prove anything.
Okay.
Now, I'd like to address something that counsel said, is that packing is five
but
times...
But if you can, briefly, only because we've gone over about 9 minutes for both
I'm
sides,
sorry,
and we want to try and keep it equal. So finish up with that one.
I think you understand this, but if you don't, it's just inaccurate to say that packing costs five times more under CLIN 2 than it does under CLIN 1. And that relates back to the idea that you only have $2 per item in CLIN 1 because you don't expect to pack everything. So it could cost you $20. In my example, it costs you actually, the one item you have to pack costs $20. You recover that at $2 a pop for everything you issue, whether it's packed or not. So the $2 doesn't represent the cost to pack something. It represents how much money the contractor allocated for packing based upon its assumption that 1 in 10 items would be packed.
Okay. Mr. Gumman, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Hybe. Thank you again.
Thank you, Your Honor.